Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
Welcome, way. This is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1993 movie Fire in the Sky, directed by Robert Lieberman, who directed a ton of TV series and films. And also directed the feature film D3, The Mighty Ducks.
So we should also say this recording may sound a little different because Eric and I are in the same room at the moment.
Yeah, we're actually in the old folks' home. It's what we call our parents' house. Drew is up in the valley. And we are here in Earthquake Central. Well, not quite. Although this morning we did have a 5.7 earthquake that was like 150 miles.
5.9, it got upgraded.
Oh, 5.9, there you go. And it was, to me, it wasn't the magnitude, it was the length of time that kind of freaked me out.
It kept going.
Yeah. And you said the fish tank here sloshed?
It was sloshing a boot. Mm.
It's for Canadian listeners.
Dad was in the backyard, and Mom was hollering at him, earthquake, and he couldn't understand what she was saying.
Yeah. It's all tracks.
Yeah. And Jesse was basically just sitting in the living room and he's like, nah, it's an earthquake.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Again, no big deal.
No, I mean, it was, on the scheme of things, it wasn't 5.9. I mean, it sounds big, but I guess in Alaska, it's just Tuesday, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know. 5.9 is still pretty big. It definitely gave us pause. All of us in my family. Although the dog was chasing the cat, so the animals didn't know. Although the bird knew. So, anyway. Okay, so Fire in the Sky. Had you seen this movie before?
Yes.
Did you see it in the theater?
No.
Okay, I think Drew and I saw it in the theater.
Okay. I can't... when did this come out?
1993.
I can't imagine I would have seen this in the movie theater. I mean, I suppose it's possible. I don't remember. I guess my best recollection is I have no recollection of, but I know I've seen it. I had seen it before. You know, I was big on the whole alien abduction thing. So
yeah, this was prime like X-Files time, right? Or the X-Files are probably winding down.
Yeah, this was the winding down years. But yeah. But it didn't. I mean, I always had an interest, so that didn't really affect or quell my interest. Although, after watching this the second time, I remembered why I never watched it again after having watched it the first time. So, because this was a fucking scary movie.
Yeah, as it turns out. So this, one of the reasons I'm glad we watched it right now is because it dovetails with you and Drew's Interview with the Vampire. Director Robert Lieberman said that author Anne Rice told him that this movie was the scariest movie she had seen at the time.
At the time in...
That she saw it.
In 1990. Oh, at the time she saw it.
Yeah.
Do we know when she saw it?
I can only imagine it was post-1993.
Well, obviously, yeah. But...
Okay. It must have been 1993.
I mean, if it was 2000, that would be a different story.
Yeah. Yeah. Still, this movie is genuinely scary.
Yes.
And it's all practical effects. Well, most of it, actually. And it looks great.
Sure.
I mean, the rest of the movie looks like a Saturday afternoon TV movie for sure.
It does look like an after-school special.
Yeah, it totally does. And the acting, about the same as that.
Yeah, and like the props. Granted, this was set in, 1975?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the props were... They looked...
Oh, they were age-appropriate.
Yeah, they were age-appropriate, but it really dated... I mean, it's a period piece, of course, so...
Yeah.
But it was kind of interesting to watch especially like the vehicle they were driving, which was like a Dodge pickup.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they were ugly. And Jesse's like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no, they're ugly.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, and fairly disposable, as it looked like.
Well, the thing about them I hate is the same thing with Volvo. Volvo, with their four-door vehicles, they use the front doors and the same for the back doors, but the doors have a curve to them, so they just put the curved doors in and put the roof around it.
Ah, yes.
I hate that. It's aesthetically, it's one of those things that really bugs me.
But that's how we got to see was it a Volvo or a Saab that had the screen door, right?
I think that was an Audi, actually.
That was Audi, yeah, you're right.
But it doesn't matter. That was impressive in its own right.
It was, yes.
I mean, it was worthy of our father's engineering skills.
Absolutely. So, and now, introduce me to, or remind me about your fascination with alien abduction.
Well, I've always listened to weird fringe radio stuff anyway.
Art Bell?
Kind of. Art Bell, I kind of listened to Art Bell for a while, but he is kind of nutsy. So anyway, he seemed to have gone off the deep end, but
yeah, yes, that was part of his charm.
There were a couple other radio hosts. I think they were local-ish, or at least they were probably syndicated very narrowly in those days. It was when I'd first moved to Portland, too. Like Ed Till, which I don't think exists. I don't think he's doing radio anymore. And there was a couple shows. But one of them, was it? It may have been Art Bell. I'm not sure. But one of them used a lot of Philip Glass bumper music.
Ah, yes.
And so the interstitials, and I'm a big Philip Glass fan, so when I was scrolling through the radio one night, and when you actually had a dial on a radio, it caught my attention, and then I was listening, and that caught my attention, and it harkened back to the days of high school when I was reading all of the Whitley Strieber Commune series books. And I always had a fair bit of skepticism with them, but I liked them for the literature value, the fiction literature value. I didn't necessarily pay a lot of attention to them. It's the same with like the Ghost of Flight 401, which is about a L-1011 aircraft that crashed into the Everglades, and people saw ghosts off the recycled parts and all that stuff. So I've always had kind of a fascination with the paranormal in a literature aspect. Don't tend to watch movies about them because they give me nightmares. I don't watch scary stuff because it gives me nightmares. So, I don't have a recollection of watching this movie. I probably blocked it out on purpose.
Well, again, this was probably the winding down of the X-File days. So maybe we were on to new things. I mean, grunge and everything.
Well, there was, X-Files and then Millennium.
Yeah.
Which lasted like two seasons, and the first season was weird, and then the second season was batshit. So,
but two words, Lance Henriksen.
Yeah. I mean, it was
by the way, shout out, Horror Etc., the podcast that I listened to, first podcast I ever gave money to, and the podcast that kind of inspired this podcast, just restarted as a Patreon concern.
So the X-Files started in 93.
Oh, okay. So this is right at the beginning of it.
I knew I wanted to check. Yeah, so that might have been... So the X-Files was 93 to 2018.
So maybe it was... Right. No. 2018 was like when the last movie was.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is probably post Project Blue Book TV show thing. I don't know. I mean, aliens have always kind of flowed in and out of the consciousness.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's an easy trope, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no... the universe is what you make of it.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Because no one... We have no tangible alien, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's less controversial than religion.
Yes.
But you can do the same thing.
Then you also get into the zombie debate, you know, which zombie lore is correct versus which is... You know, which is canon, which is just schlock.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, luckily we have the ufologists or whatever, like in this movie.
Afar.
Yes, Afar.
Man.
MUFON.org.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, it's a portmanteau. of MUFON, which I think is the real thing.
Yes.
And MUFON.org, which is also a different real thing.
Yeah, MUFON is a real thing. And since we're talking about the books that I have listened to in the past, I actually have been listening to on Audible. Oh, yeah. So I have a whole series of books about aliens called Not Alone, the Not Alone series by Craig Falconer that I have 9. I've listened to 9 books in that series, I think.
And it's about alien abduction, or it's about...
It's not about alien abduction, but it's about aliens.
Okay.
And it's interesting. It's an interesting series because the premise... The first book, the premise is... Well, I don't want to give it away. If you're interested in it, I recommend it as a series.
But it's how aliens interact with humans?
It is an alien contact.
Okay, it's not like story. Dune. It's just about a bunch of aliens.
Right. It happens on Earth.
Okay, that's what I mean.
So yeah, the origin is Earth, and then there's aliens and intrigue and espionage and craziness.
Cool.
But there are a whole bunch of books.
There's a podcast called Astounding Legends, and I was listening to there's another podcast called Sam Pancake Presents Saturday Morning Matinee, I think, where he talks about schlocky old 70s TV movies. But he actually talked about a movie that he really enjoyed, not for shock value, because it was really valuable. And it was, I forget the title of the movie, but it was the Betty and Barney Hill story of their alien contact.
That sounds very familiar.
And it was... the guy who plays Barney Hill was James Earl Jones.
Oh.
And, I mean, both performances, I can't remember who the female lead was, but and they treated it with reverence. And his guest was the guy from Astounding Legends. And so I actually loaded up the podcast that dealt with the ghosts of Flight 401.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And also Black Eyed Children. And what's the other one I did? I'm a big fan of the Dyatlov Pass thing, which is probably just an earthquake or avalanche or whatever. But still, you know, so I get into that. I'm not a believer in anything, really. But, yeah, it's entertaining.
I know the Hill Abduction. I'm familiar with that. By the way, The Ghost of Flight 401 as a book will scare the crap out of you.
Oh, yeah.
If you read it. I was reading it living in this house at the time. In my bedroom, which is, this is a little house, so my window was at the ground height in winter. It was wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I couldn't put it down, which is a good and bad thing on a scary book, because it's a scary book. And at like 1:30 in the morning, I was like, oh God, I either have to stay awake or I'm going to have to try and steal myself to go to sleep. And I was like, So I think I turned every light on I could, and I was just like, oh, I'm not going to sleep.
Oh, that's funny.
But it's a great book.
Segging back to, if that's a word, back to Interview with the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. I think Mom gave me the book in maybe 1983, something like that. And then I read The Vampire Lestat after that. Two different presentations. Interview with the Vampire is a pretty short book. And it's a pretty...
I think it was only like 350 pages or something.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fun. It was, and not entirely heavy lifting. The Vampire Lestat, I think, was like a 600-page book. Kind of like a Stephen King-ish book, where you spend a lot of time with Lestat in period piece times. But, I mean, I got through it. It was fine.
Is it worthwhile?
Yeah, I remember it being worthwhile. But it's so a lot of stuff.
Is Interview with the Vampire the book worthwhile? Because the movie is not really worthwhile.
Yeah. See, I remember it being a good gateway to the universe. And then Lestat is like full diving into the deep end of the universe. And it goes on, as you mentioned, it goes on and on and on. I think I read Memnoch the Devil, too. It was like, yeah.
Because that's what Drew and I discussed, was that the bad thing about this freaking movie, The Interview with the Vampire, is that by the end of it, like, I didn't want to. But I needed to know what happened next.
Yeah.
Because the way they ended it, it was clear they were trying to launch into a sequel, or they had at least very smartly figured that it might segue into a sequel. So yeah, that was the good news, bad news that the movie ended. The good news is that it ended. The bad news is that I wanted what happened next against my own free will. So
yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know. I remember it being really light compared to Lestat. Lestat was a lot more
thick.
Well, also just a lot more detailed. Like, it really got into stuff that Interview the Vampire kind of glossed over. So, but again, that was, you know, it's a perfectly good introduction. And yeah, you mentioned, what was it? That Dan Aykroyd, Rosie O'Donnell movie. That is not in the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is a pure, like, erotic novel or whatever. She had, like, a whole Sleeping Beauty, like, erotic series or whatever. That, you know, again, wasn't really my cup of tea. But it was, of course, before we had the abundance of freely available erotic stuff that we do today.
Also, is there a more unlikely pairing than Dan Aykroyd and Rosie O'Donnell?
Well, again, it's not... Yeah, it's not perfect. I mean, they're supposed to be super straight-laced, uptight. So that works. I mean, that cast it okay. Because seeing them in, like, bondage gear...
Like Sherry Lewis and John Goodman.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah,
it just seems, like, seems but disproportionate.
But that's on purpose.
No. All right.
Because you want to see... Anyway, I don't know if I like Dan Aykroyd as an actor. Frankly. But anyway...
I don't know that I especially find him all that funny as a comedian either.
No, not really. I mean, he's a good straight man, kind of.
Every now and then, I mean, I think we're way off track now, but Neighbors, right?
Yeah. I have not seen Neighbors in a very long time.
Neither have I.
Okay.
But I watched it like 1,000 times when I was a little kid, so
Dr. Better. Detroit.
I never saw Dr. Detroit.
Oh, if I remember correctly, that was also Dan Aykroyd.
And I have to say...
Well, of course, Dragnet.
I have to... Well...
With Tom Hanks.
I haven't watched that.
I mean... it's probably horrible, but I do have fond memories of it.
Yeah. But I don't like... I will... this is polarizing. I don't like Blues Brothers.
I like the music from Blues Brothers.
That does not redeem the movie.
I thought it was fine. I mean, it was just... I think they accomplished what they set out to do.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, that's something.
Yeah.
So, Aliens, okay. Hills, The Hill Abduction, this movie, 93.
Okay. Shall we dive in?
Was this movie successful?
Let's find out, because I cannot imagine it being all that successful. Although, I bet you the budget was rock bottom.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet they didn't spend any money on this.
And yet, it has a cast of really pretty fun actors.
Oh. Budget was approximately $15 million. That seems like a lot for 93.
It is a lot, yeah.
Gross worldwide, $19 million. So that's not so much a success.
No.
The filming location, Oakland, Oregon.
I've never heard of such a place, but it makes sense.
I've never heard of such a place either.
Yeah. It definitely looked more Oregon, but of course I've never been in Snowflake, Arizona, or in the mountains of Arizona.
It didn't look like Arizona. It didn't look like my concept of Arizona.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that perhaps Arizona has really great skiing I don't know about.
Sure.
There's mountains.
The population in Oakland was 927.
Oh, nice.
As of the 2010 census.
Oh, so their film crew probably doubled their population.
Probably. I'm trying to see where it is. Ugh,
every restaurant was full.
It is 3/4 of the way between Portland and the California border. So it's pretty south.
Okay. All right. So that kind of works.
It's next to Roseburg.
Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter because they were only there for like 5 days pretty much this movie takes place over the course of 5 days, roughly. On November 5th, 1975 in Snowflake, Arizona, logger Travis Walton, played by D.B. Sweeney, from Atlas Shrugged 2, The Strike, The Cutting Edge, Lonesome Dove, and Eight Men Out, and his coworkers Mike Rogers, played by Robert Patrick, from Terminator 2, TV's Scorpion, and TV's The X-Files and Die Hard 2, Alan Dallas, played by Craig Schaefer, and he is Canadian heartthrob. I think he's Canadian, and we know him from Nightbreed. Yeah. By the way, Dallas's character is kind of an asshole in the movie, and apparently Craig Schaefer was kind of an asshole on the set as well. Like, he showed up late to stuff, and the crew hated him.
Do you think he was method acting?
Well, they used it. The director's like, oh no, we're not going to fire him. We're going to keep him, but keep him away from you guys so that your animosity is true.
Apparently he was in a Justin Timberlake movie.
Craig Schaefer? Craig Schaefer, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been in everything.
Oh, he is. Yeah.
Where was he born? I just associated him with Canada.
New York.
Okay, well.
Oh, sorry. York, Pennsylvania.
Okay, well. Okay.
Craig Eric Schaefer.
Sure. He was also in Some Kind of Wonderful.
River Runs Through It.
Yes, River Runs Through It. Okay, and then we have David Whitlock, played by Peter Berg, from Collateral and The Last Seduction. We have Greg Hayes, played by Henry Thomas, from Suicide Kings, Valmont, but most importantly, he was Elliot from E.T., which was probably a big selling point for this movie.
Wow. Okay.
And then Bobby Cogdale, played by Bradley Gregg, from Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Bobby.
Whiplash, Indiana Jones, and The Last Crusade. Anyway, this crew, and Mike is pretty much the leader. This segment of the podcast brought to you by freezer noises.
As it classes out, I'm going to the next period.
It's okay. We're in ambient. We're in Studio F at this point.
The F studio.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize he was from E.T.
Yeah.
Unrecognizable, but yeah, of course he was, you know, a child.
This may have been one of the first things he did as a...
Adult,
yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Of course, how old was he in E.T.? Well, he was a legitimate kid, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously. I mean, Drew Barrymore was younger, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
But she was supposed to be. So. Anyway, yeah. So driving home from work, the loggers come across an unidentified flying object.
Well, the movie does a fake out because the movie gives you an open and then you go back and go through the open all over again.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I love how it bounces back in time. It's really effective. Actually, the movie had one part that I loved. I'll tell you about it in a second.
Okay.
It's coming up.
All right.
So basically they have a contract. Mike is the foreman of this group, and they have a contract to clear the side of a mountain of like deadfall and trees and stuff. And, they apparently need to get this contract done so they get paid because Mike's house is on the line, his relationship with his wife.
His vehicle.
Yeah, his vehicle is crappy. Everything. Mike needs the money for sure.
Yeah.
And Mike lives with his wife and his sister-in-law, who is... now, his wife actually was in Roadhouse. I think... what is her name? Kathleen Willard. Was in Color of Night with Bruce Willis and Roadhouse.
Huh.
But his sister-in-law, her younger sister, is, I guess, dating Travis, who is Mike's best friend.
Yes.
And Travis, again, D.B. Sweeney in 1993 was the equivalent of Paul Rudd maybe in 2015.
He reminds me of, of course I'm going to forget the name.
Maybe Dan Cortez from Northern Exposure.
Oh, man. Oh, that was a deep draw. I can see his name.
But he just got like an infectious grin, and he's like your average Midwestern white guy.
Can't remember the actor's name.
By the way, this part of the podcast brought to you by Typing Sounds. Not as bad as in Oregon.
Oh, of course there's a Walking Dead wiki. So, D.B. Sweeney in this movie reminded me of Josh McDermott in The Walking Dead. He plays Eugene.
No idea what that means, but I'm sure there are listeners who are saying, yes!
Let me show you since we're in the same room.
Okay, yeah, we can. Well, A-B this stuff. Do it live.
So that's what I saw. I was like, oh, mullet boy.
Yeah, there's a lot of mullets in this. Mullets are well represented.
Oh yeah. I mean,
mullets and ponytails. I mean, Craig Schaefer just has a straight up pony.
Smelly.
Yeah, they all probably didn't smell too good. But again, these are like
loggers.
Yeah.
Ostensibly. Or
yeah, there's probably they're forest workers is what they are.
Okay.
Yeah. because they're not logging. They're not logging.
Really, to get timber. Deforest workers.
Well, there's that. Yeah. Bones.
We're gonna be technical about it.
Yeah. Okay. My first Star Trek joke that I did, it fell flat.
Oh.
Deforest.
Workers. I got it. I just got it.
No, it's fine. It's not good.
Yeah. I did. I was not. My synapses were not firing.
Beep.
That's what happens when I'm on vacation.
Yeah. They come across an unidentified flying object. Curious.
Well, no.
This sentence for the whole time. Anyway.
They don't. They see, first of all, they think there's a forest fire.
Yeah, they see this red light, like over a ridge.
Which I wrote down, red light. That was a much better movie.
You don't like the movie because it scared you.
Well, I don't like the movie that it scared me, but I don't like the movie because it's bad.
Okay, well.
I mean,
baked different, but we'll continue.
That's two different distinct things.
Okay, all right.
But I appreciate that observation.
So, yeah. So, first they see, a fire in the sky.
Well.
They think it's a forest fire.
Yeah. They don't know what it is. They just, well, what's that over there?
Yeah.
And then they're arguing about what it is.
And they're all blurry-eyed, and it's like six guys in this truck, and some of them don't like each other very much.
Well, they're probably huffing exhaust anyway, because God knows it was the 70s, right?
Happily so.
And it was leaded fuel.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were tired from, working on the mountain the whole day. So, and it's after dark. So, anyway, they're coming down the mountain. And I was gonna try to wedge in a
coming meat puppets.
Coming down from the mountain, I have seen the high and mighty. I will go again someday. But for now, I'm coming down. Coming down from the mountain, I have seen the lofty glory. I will go again someday. But for now, I have seen the information on the lighter side of dumbness. I have heard the new statistic, men were stomping on the ground. Again, slowly up the rock slide, one thing always seems apparent. If the climb becomes too much, I can always turn around.
Oh, I was going to say, I went the other way with that. I went come around the mountain song.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
This is why we're a team.
Yes, exactly. So, all right. So, curious to learn more, Walton gets out of the truck and is struck by a beam of light from an object and is sent flying several feet backwards as if pushed by an unseen force. By the way, these guys, first of all, they were losing their shit before Travis got out of the car, truck, whatever. But when he got white lighted and exploded across an obvious depression? They're like, he is dead. He is dead. Get the fuck out of here. He is dead. And so you can see Mike has some inner turmoil. But he's like, okay. So they take off down the mountain.
This collective panic is, yes. I think, what feeds into his fight or flight.
Yeah. Well, you never know what you're going to do. I'll refer you to Bear Jumps Out of a Tree. Sometimes, even though you've been told don't run from a bear, you hear a bear fall out of a tree, you tend to get behind other people, let's say.
Well, it's the old parable. You don't have to be the fastest runner. You just have to be faster than somebody else.
Exactly, yes. And if you're not one with a gun, probably getting a head start doesn't hurt anybody. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, good memories.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So they drive down the mountain to get the fuck out of there. But then Roger stops the car and is like, no, we got to go back. And the other guys are like, no, we do not. He's dead. We are gone. And Mike is like, get out of the car. I will come pick you up. But I need to go back for my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he dumps all the four guys out in the middle of the logging road or whatever. And he goes back up the hill. And then the next thing you see is they drive into town and end up at the restaurant bar thing.
Now, is the implication that the one guy's a priest?
He's not a priest. But
he's devout, clearly.
Yes, he's a man of God.
But they made him look like a priest.
They did, yeah. He was the church boy kind of character. The altar
boy. Ultra church boy.
Yeah. But they go down. By the way, if you're ever in a situation where you look at the people you're with and say, okay, we need to keep our story straight, you know that something bad has happened.
That's usually a decision tree gone wrong.
Yeah. That, by the way, is not, okay, everybody needs to tell the truth. That's like, we've got our story and we're sticking to it. Yeah, which is, by the way, when you interview people, why you separate them.
Yes.
But anyway, James Garner has his, you know, Maverick has his own his own way of doing business. He's got a tape deck, and he's gonna take care of it.
James Garner, that was such a trip.
Well, okay, so
he's the best part of this movie, by the way.
Absolutely. Oh, I don't know. I think last scene, Robert Patrick with the full on
mullet
and full beard and chicken in a bread pan, picking out dough hat.
He had like a tribble on his face.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, that was the best part. No, the best scene in this entire movie is when we are introduced to James Garner, because he's a sheriff or whatever, and he is driving along in his LTD, and he gets a call on the radio telling him to go into this one town to talk to the local sheriff. I guess James Garner works for like the state police or something, or he's worked for a couple.
He must have multi-jurisdictions.
Yeah, he's got something. Anyway, so because the local sheriff, it's out of his league, this whole abduction thing. But I love this scene because when you meet James Garner, he's talking on the radio and say, okay, I'll head over there. And then you see the series of red lights that are reflected on him through his car windshield.
Yes.
And it's just the most brilliant basic fake out ever.
It was, and I actually thought at that point, I hadn't remembered this movie yet, and I thought,
yeah, me too.
Wow, that was a great cinematic moment. Yeah. That was like a great...
It's perfect.
I had not expected that, and it caught me. And I'd seen it before, and it still mm-hmm. got me. So me that's too. What I liked about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, because like, you're just sucked right into the fact that, oh, he's seeing this, you know, these lights, the same red lights that these guys thought. No, it was a railroad crossing signal. Beautiful. Beautiful piece of cinema right there.
It was a nice misdirection.
Yeah. So, the loggers go down to the restaurant, bar, whatever, and they are obviously shook. So, they call the police and report their friend missing.
Have you seen a recent picture of Travis Walton?
No, but I know he's an old guy.
He's an odd-looking mofo.
Yeah, well, he's no D.B. Sweeney, for sure.
Huh. Sorry, I'm looking up where Snowflake, Arizona is because I want to see. If maybe it's on the border and that's why they have some jurisdiction.
Is it made up?
No, it's a real place.
Okay.
Fairly, it's not quite central, but it's just, it's halfway between the center of Arizona and the border to New Mexico. So I don't know why James Garner has multiple jurisdictions, but whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Maybe because there's next to some Indian reservations, there are some contracted issues. I don't know.
Well, also 1975. I mean, he's got a reputation for never having an unsolved case or whatever. Although he continues to, whenever that's mentioned, he's like, well, that's not exactly true. But is
that false modesty or is that true?
Probably both. It's probably, you know, you can get a lot of mileage out of, you know, being falsely modest and letting the myth perpetuate that you've never. So the local sheriff is played by Noble Willingham, who we know him from City Slickers 1 and 2, The Hudsucker Proxy, The Last Boy Scout, and Good Morning Vietnam.
He's been in everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's character actor, like, supreme. And then, of course, James Garner is just James Garner. I mean, maybe it's because we grew up with Rockford Files and all that stuff, but he's just, I'm happy to see him on the screen. His voice is just iconic.
Your favorite James Garner film?
My favorite James Garner film.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, I mean, I know we talked about Twilight.
Twilight?
Yeah. Not the Susan Sarandon, Paul Newman James Garner Twilight.
Oh, I don't know that I've seen that, have I?
What's your favorite James Garner movie?
It would be a tie between Space Cowboys and Victor Victoria.
Ah, I've never seen Space Cowboys.
It's. I think it's Tommy Lee Jones and Dirty Harry, puts his face.
Clint Eastwood?
Yes, and James Garner.
Okay. Well, he was also in Hail to the Chief, right? Was that the movie where he and Jack Lemmon were ex-presidents?
That sounds right.
Hail to the chief, he's the chief and he needs a...
That's Dave.
No? Well, okay. Maybe. I thought it was... No, that was Jack Lemmon and somebody.
Okay.
Will you stop whistling, please? I'm trying to sleep over here.
Sleeping too much is a sign of depression.
Yeah, well, you keep whistling and I'll put a depression in your skull.
We've got damn near 8 hours before we get to the library. I'm just trying to stay alert.
Well, I hate that song.
So do I.
I made up words to the damn thing.
What?
I made up words to Hail to the Chief. I sing them to myself every time they play it.
I made up words to it, too.
Yeah, let me hear yours.
Now you go first.
No, no, you do yours and I'll sing mine.
Hail to the chief, he's the chief and he needs hailing. He is the chief, so everybody hail like crazy. Hail to... That's more or less... Okay, well, let's hear your version, Gershwin.
No.
Well, what do you mean, no? I sang mine.
I know, you're an idiot.
I don't think I've ever seen Victor Victoria all the way through either, because I don't like Julie Andrews. No reason. I just hate Mary Poppins.
Okay. Well, so, all right.
Anyway, so they tell their story to the local sheriff, who's like, okay, we need more help with this one. And then the lieutenant comes in, Lieutenant Frank Waters, and he starts interviewing them, and they tell their story. And as you can imagine, they're like, oh no, they killed their friend. This is the goofiest story ever. This is completely unbelievable. There's no evidence. But we'll wait until morning and we'll get helicopters and some dogs and horses and we'll beat the bushes till we find this guy.
Objectively, I mean, I suspect strongly from a law enforcement perspective, this would be a whole bunch of like, yeah, you killed him.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this wild-ass story is like, okay, this just fails the bullshit test right here. Which is how Waters is dealing with this. So, but of course, the sheriff knows these guys, and he knows them all to be all upstanding guys, except for Alan Dallas, who is this stranger, and it turns out he's got a criminal history. But he's also a jackass and does not like to ingratiate himself to strangers, let's say. He does not go out of his way to be polite nor nice. But let me tell you, he was doing the workouts, though. Craig Shaver in this movie is like, he's ripped. 1993, too. So, anyway. So, Lieutenant Waters, during the interview, realizes all the tension that has happened between Walton and Dallas, leading him to believe that maybe Dallas did something to Walton. And then he also discovers, he muses aloud, like, how these guys came up with this cockamamie story. And he pulls, like, the equivalent of the National Enquirer out of the car. Did you see the other headline in that issue?
No.
The big headline was, how mayonnaise has improved my sex life.
Ugh.
It's like, oh, that's awesome.
Ugh. Oh, that's...
Anyway, so they start beating the bushes, and they're accused of murder.
That made all of the hair on my arms stand up. That's that whole mayonnaise thing. Right. Seriously, I have goosebumps from that.
Are you chilled by condiments? Do emulsions squick you out?
I hate mayonnaise. I just don't like mayonnaise.
Oh, mayonnaise is great. I love mayonnaise.
It's a little revealing about you, I think.
I don't use it for sexual reasons.
Hey,
not since college.
This is TMI. Come on. I don't want this. We're moving on now.
Yeah. Obviously, pretty much the whole town thinks these guys have killed Travis. And Travis's brother, Dan Walton, played by Scott McDonald, he played the titular Jack Frost, and also was in the movie Jarhead. He's not very happy about it. Oh, by the way, the girlfriend is now basically moved out of the Rogers house and is living with the Waltons. And Mike Rogers and his wife are pretty much breaking up. Also, the Golden Raspberry Award for worst kid actor has got to be one of the girls, one of the Rogers girls.
Yeah.
Just really, like, cringy kid acting.
Yeah, but in 93, they
didn't linger on it, but still, yeah. Anyway, so then they are offered to take a lie detector test. And at first they're like, no, 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 especially Dallas, who's like, no, once the machine says you did it, no one will believe that you didn't.
He seems pretty knowledgeable of unfavorable outcomes with law enforcement.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and again, he's not wrong because, you know, a polygraph can never be used to help you. It can only be used to hurt you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 The only thing that's cool about the polygraph is you can offer it to somebody. If they refuse, then you can lean on them for that. But it's not admissible usually. And it's certainly not admissible to say that they didn't want to take one. And I think it's kind of junk science now, right? They're finding problems with fingerprints, so
they're finding problems with fingerprints.
Yep, fingerprints are surprisingly bad as a piece of evidence. But anyway,
thanks for that, nightmare fuel.
Well, again, if all you've got is fingerprints, you're kind of screwed anyway. You're on a little bit of thin ice anyway. Don't rely on that.
As someone accused or as law enforcement?
Both.
This is not comforting.
Well, no, actually, if you're accused of something and they match your fingerprints, then you have to, I think you have to drill down to how many points of similarity, what percentage of people would have that kind of, like, what are the real odds?
So it becomes an odds game.
Yeah, it's much less than, say, DNA, which has huge odds.
Well, we think they do.
Yeah, that's something too. Anyway, black box voting. Okay, so... Stop this deal. Theranos. Okay, so...
Hey, Kennedy's coming back.
He's already here.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Junior, though, I don't know why. Dad, anyway, it's a long story. Okay, so, did you remember George Magazine?
Yes.
Yeah, he would not have been a Republican.
Well, one would not think so.
Although his uncle is batshit crazy.
Is his uncle
Robert Kennedy Jr.?
Is he the one that's currently still in session?
No, he's anti-vaxxer extreme. He's been an anti-vaxxer for a long time.
So
environmentalist nut job and a pseudoscience enthusiast.
He's like Martin Sheen's brother.
Is Martin Sheen's brother?
Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
Raul Estevez. Ramon Estevez.
Ramon to the babies.
His brother, because Martin Sheen is a big hippie liberal, bleeding heart. Great. I like Martin Sheen very much as an actor and as a person. He's amazing. So he's anti-gun. He's anti-death penalty. He's pretty far left.
Yeah.
The NRA hires his brother, who sounds just like him, to do ads.
Nice.
Because it sounds...
Yeah, sure.
So, it's that kind of experience, you know, it's that kind of, you know, familial bonding that I must make Christmas reunions very uncomfortable, holiday events and
things. You realize that probably Estevez family...
Well, at this point...
Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
Charlie.
Yeah. Let's just say the turkey might end up on the floor.
I don't even know what that means, but we'll just move on. Is that a Christmas Story reference?
No, just literally. It's always sad when the turkey ends up on the floor or somebody knocks over the Christmas tree during a fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had that happen.
Oh, no, we haven't. Yeah.
Is this a common occurrence that has been afflicting the nation that I just...
Domestic violence is a sad thing.
Oh, okay. I'm not trying to...
Remember, I worked a lot of Christmases and Thanksgiving, right. So...
That's a fair point.
People are still drinking and fighting on Christmas and Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway. Let's see. So we have lie detector tests, and we have kind of what reminded me of that Pleasantville... town hall meeting.
Yes.
Rogers is like, you know me, you know, our kids go to school together. What are you accusing
me
of?
He's trying to shame everybody.
Exactly.
Public shaming.
Yeah. But I could totally see being like, no, Mike, I think you murdered him. like, what am I saying? I'm saying, doesn't look good for you, dude.
Occam's razor, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
By the way, Travis Walton
was
in that crowd.
Yeah, makes sense. He fit right in. Have you seen the picture? Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, they end up taking the lie detector test. And of course, the tests are, one of the tests has some flaws or something, or anomalies. So they want to retake them the next morning. And Rogers is like, nope, I did this one time. Why would dragging us back do anything for us? And then when they leave all in a huff, it's discovered that basically only Dallas' test was all over the place because he's maybe high in airplane glue.
Or doesn't trust the test, and so he's nervous about everything anyway.
Yeah, he's totally freaked out.
Yeah.
And the rest of their tests were pretty much, like, they were telling the truth as far as the guy could tell.
As far as interpreted by the... Yeah. What are they? What, I don't know what the people are called.
Polygraphers.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds wrong.
Sounds a little Mormon-y. So, anyway.
Okay.
Although, I think at one time, did they mention this is a Mormon town?
I don't know. Did they?
I don't know. Because I know the church that the church guy was involved in looked kind of Catholic to me.
I was not paying enough attention to the religion. The religious undertones of this movie.
He had the John Boy glasses, though, too. So, like the John Boy Walton glasses.
That's why I thought he was a priest.
Yeah.
Because he looked... He also simultaneously reminded me of the German from Indiana Jones.
That's it, yeah.
The Melty
Father Mulcahy kind of thing.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, so... but by the way, that is not the end of the story. The story takes a turn here.
If only...
Because Mike has been living in a hotel. There's some cheesy reporters kind of in the business of the whole town.
Well, the reporters get wind of the story. And then, of course, it's sensational. So it makes money, right? It's a moneymaker, even back then.
Absolutely.
You know, you want to get the scoop. And if it's exciting alien and it turns out it's a murder, then it's like, you know.
A multi-day manhunt is a multi-day manhunt.
Yeah. You know, my kid went up in a weather balloon. We better get him. Mm-hmm. Oops.
Gabby Pepito, right? How long did they look for her?
I don't know.
Until they found her. Well, they looked until they found her.
Well,
and they looked for him until they found him.
That's very astute.
I'm telling you, it was the last place they looked. So all of a sudden, Rogers happens to be at his house again. Although his wife isn't super happy about it, necessarily, but he fell asleep watching TV with the kids. And they get a phone call that is presumably a crank call, but it's a collect call.
Well, but the wife is already, she doesn't believe him either.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no, no. Yeah.
She's like, no. Well, she doesn't come out and say it, but he asks her point blank, you know, don't you believe me? And she doesn't answer.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the answer.
Yep.
No, I don't believe you.
Yeah, by the way, it didn't matter because the marriage had some problems anyway.
Wow.
And then, of course, the government canceled his contract. So there you go. So he's going to lose the house probably anyway.
What happens when you get falsely accused?
I'm telling you. Yeah. Yep. So, but luckily it only lasts for 5 days because then Travis calls from a payphone. And Travis is... let's just say in the last 5 days, he's seen some shit.
In theory.
Yeah. Because when they found him, he was... maybe he was just super dehydrated and you get crazy when you get dehydrated. Maybe it's that. Maybe he tripped and fell into a sack full of Dallas's airplane glue. Whatever. But, yeah. So he calls and they all go and pick him up from...
So... question. Because it's been a long time since I've used a payphone.
Yeah.
Can you call collect without having any coins?
I think so. I think if you rattled the little...
It's been so long, the receiver.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you, like, rattled that and got some operator's attention, you could say...
All right. You need a collect call. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Because he didn't have any clothes on, so he didn't have any money. So...
Well, it was like when when Mike put his coins into the payphone at the restaurant to call the police in the first place, I was like, you know, you didn't need coins to call 911, except there was not universal 911 then.
Yeah, that town might not have had a 911.
Exactly, yeah. So who knows? Anyway.
Also, it was a rotary phone.
Yeah, I love that. The best. So, and but they did the great film thing where they showed him dial the first number and they didn't have to show him dial the rest of the numbers. That was great. Also, kids today wouldn't understand that you had to, like, dial a number and wait till it went click, 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 to dial the next number. Imagine. You know, I think a lot about Star Trek IV these days. When because now I talk to Alexa on a frequent basis.
Are you talking about hello computer?
Exactly. It's like you have to use that thing. It's like, oh, quaint. And he picks it up and talks into the mouse as if it were a microphone. Yeah, that's we're living that now.
Well, I was watching something recently where they talk. It's a common trope, but technology today is indistinguishable from magic 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
If you took what you had today and went back 100 years, people would thought you were the devil or a demon or a god in some cases. There's a whole West Wing episode that involves a reporter that said he got out of some sketchy African native village because he told them that the weather was going to change, and so they thought he was a god, and he was all using it from his phone. So
it is back far back as Mark Twain, right? Didn't they have the... Was it the Connecticut... Yankee and King Arthur's Court, where he used the eclipse trick, or was that even?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah,
my Mark Twain is
like,
not.
If you don't release me from jail, I will blot out the sun. Of course, again, maybe I'm mixing things. Who knows? Anyway, it's a good trope.
Yes.
If you have an almanac handy, you know the eclipse is coming.
So Travis is the Travis calls.
Yeah.
Collect. Well, except we never hear his voice on the phone. They don't bother that. But
oh, no. You do hear his voice.
Well, you hear a voice, but it's inconclusive whose voice. But, what's his face? Convinced it's Travis.
Yeah.
So they're all like, I gotta go get him. And then they like...
See, that's why it's valuable to have a safe word. So if he's like, Mike, pineapple... I'm in Paradise City and I'm covered in pineapple.
What was that? I'm trying to think now. See, that spawned another tangent. There's a show I'm watching, or was it a show where the crew of people are talking to one another and they have a safe word among them where they mean, no, this is really not bullshit. We're really serious about this. Yeah. I can't remember what it is. Stupid. All right, anyway.
Yeah, we have programs to talk about, too, after this movie. Anyway, so they go to Huber.
Well, they drive a couple places, because, of course, nobody's sure where he is, and he doesn't seemingly know where he is.
Yes. And Mike is a good friend. Also, he calls the number of the, because he doesn't trust the police now, right?
Of course.
So he calls the guys from afar, the ufologists, which also, I loved it because it was perfect. It's like they weren't doing anything that would be at all helpful, and they were just getting in the way and making Mike look like a douche.
Well, they were self-aggrandizing.
Yeah, absolutely. We need a sample of your urine. No, you don't. We need to call an ambulance to get him to the hospital. Have you looked at his eye? He's all messed up.
Yeah, and he has a little... I mean, clearly they push him to past the point of sanity because he...
Yeah.
Has a breakdown.
Just the fingerprints on the
that was window. So creepy.
Isn't that great? I loved it.
Oh, that was like E.T.
Beautiful. Yep.
E.T. and what...
That's what practical effects.
Was there a psycho scene with a hand in the window?
You're probably thinking of legendary horror movie Titanic?
No. No, I was. I think one of the psycho movies. Somebody's in the basement of the house and they claw at the window. And
could be.
Again, this, I don't watch movies like this because it scares the crap out of me.
Yeah. So Travis is kind of messed up. he can't. He's dehydrated, of course, and naked and incoherent. And then they take him to the hospital, and the hospital is an old timey hospital where it's just one room with a bunch of beds in it. And who sneaks in but Mike, who tells him, "Hey Trav, so happy to see you. I once we've been back and couldn't find you, it's like, oh my god." Which, by the way, he tells him, "They don't want us to be in here. You shouldn't have any visitors, but I'm here to say hi." There's a reason for that. But unfortunately, that's when Travis figures out, "What do you mean came back for me? You left me?" you left me. Do you have any idea? He didn't have to say all those words because we don't even know what he's gone through yet. We see some of it, like when he's taken in the hospital, and they kind of he flashes back to when he was taken aboard the ship and kind of has to go down like a tunnel with lights overhead and all that stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff. Yeah.
Ugh.
So yeah, so then they have a homecoming party where everybody brings their funeral potatoes.
Why? Why would you? The guy's had a traumatic experience and he's been gone for 5 days and missing, and so they're going to have a big potluck?
Well, you know what cures a lot of stuff? Tater salad. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Just for the record, if I'm ever abducted for any period of time and brought back, the last thing I want is a goddamn buffet party.
You don't want a casserole?
No.
Okay.
So no, thank you.
Special tater salad just for Jason.
Special tater salad.
Ugh. Oh, full of mayonnaise. You're probably one of those German potato salad guys who like mustard on it. So.
You don't put mustard on German potato salad.
Okay, what do you put?
It is wine vinegar.
Oh, there you go. Well, okay.
It is red potatoes, sautéed onions, bacon, and wine vinegar.
Okay, all right.
See? And it is delicious.
If you don't be better, mayonnaise in it.
Ah.
Okay, anyway. So and also gross. Cold. I don't want my potato salad hot. So
you just don't like German food.
Not especially.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, it turns out it has to be. It works for me. So he breaks down at the party, which is also sad. And unrelated, I posted on Facebook that Fruity Pebbles syrup they have at the store. I don't even know what that... What is Fruity Pebbles syrup? What would that taste like?
Maple fruit?
Maybe not maple at all. I don't
know. Maybe not. Maybe just fruit. Yeah.
But like...
I like Fruity Pebbles
syrup. Sort of
viscous.
Pinkish, viscous fluid. That would have actually worked better for the scene at the house when he crawls under the table and gets dripped on by syrup. And
navel jelly.
But then we get a flashback, and we get the good flashback. This is where all that money went.
Good being relative.
Yeah, this is where he wakes up in a slimy cocoon. He's got all that plastic stuff. That, again, it's sort of a trope now where, you know, you put your hand through like the membrane. Salt wall turns into a membranous thing.
Ugh.
And it's got those little, like, almost like circuitry things, but also looks like those fingerprint things that he had on the window. So it's great. And they spent a little too much time with him in like zero G floating around.
That was really fake.
Yeah. But I thought it was awesome that they showed what looked like the classic gray aliens, but those turn out to be just spacesuits. And the real aliens look like Mitch McConnell. Not even kidding. They were some tortoise-looking guys. Am I wrong?
No.
Okay.
You're not right.
I think it's AB, that Mitch McConnell.
I didn't connect those dots. I mean, it's beautiful. I'm actually really enjoying that in my head is better than this movie.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying that mental picture.
So then
you skip the part where he finds the dead guy.
Oh, yeah. No, he finds the dead guy, and then he interrupts the sleepiness or whatever of the Mitch McConnell guys. And the Mitch McConnell guys take him to the exam room.
Well, he kicks one of them right in the head.
Yeah.
And there's an altercation, and he's going for his key with the snowflake on it.
It's very nice.
It was just terrifying.
It was terrifying. And it was because they sucked him down to the...
they put him like in a vac bed.
Yes.
Like some weird bondage vacuum bed where...
Again, more membranes and...
He can't breathe. And then they poke a hole. It was just terrible.
And then his eye, it's like... it's beautiful. It was like so well done as far as crafted to get you all squeaky with the body horror.
Well done. It's really...
No, it's great. It does what it's trying to do. It is trying to creep you the F out.
It worked. It was very effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved it. And he looks legitimately terrified and screaming, and it's just great.
I'll give him credit. I mean,
And that's the reason for the season. That's why I wanted to watch this movie again, because I had heard, I saw some sort of like clickbait headline with something about how, like, this is the scariest alien abduction scene ever. And, or maybe it was like the top five or whatever. But then I remember Fire in the Sky. I don't remember that movie being all that good, but maybe it is super scary. And then I watch it again. I'm like, oh yeah, this is effective. And when I watch it again, like last night for this, it works every time. It's great. Throw James Garner in the mix. Perfect.
Okay.
But yeah, and they have the whole thing with his, the ocular probe.
Oh.
And it's, I love it, because it's all like space station, but it's also super greasy and like low tech feeling.
Well, they clearly don't, they're not big on hygiene in an operating theater when they're operating on humans. They don't care.
Yeah. So,
If they kill him, they'll just go abduct someone else.
Yep. And anyway, so he eventually loses consciousness, and then when he finds himself back on Earth, that's when he makes his way down, or whatever. They don't really talk about that. But, so Lieutenant Waters dismisses this whole thing as a hoax. He's like, they are just trying to make money off this. And he accuses Walton directly of it when some kids want Travis's autograph or whatever. And the film culminates in a denouement between Walton and Rogers, both of whom struggle with trauma. This is where, on his way to his job, because 2 years later, Travis has a real job, he sees a billboard for a motorcycle, a Harley Davidson, and he remembers, like, he and Mike were going to open, well, it was his dream that he and Mike were going to open up MT Motors for Mike and Travis. Like, they the bikes are so good, the showroom's almost always MT.
Yes, yeah. Mike and Travis.
Yeah. Anyway. And yeah, so he goes up to basically Rogers' Unabomber shack. It's kind of, it's half a Unabomber, half just divorced dad. Like, that's, yeah. He doesn't take the kids here for the weekend. He has to go into town for a supervised visit, it seems.
Yeah, I would see that.
And he hasn't really talked to anybody lately either, because...
Really, he's talked to no one.
Yeah, because he doesn't even know that he's an uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and will be a second one. And they named the kid after him.
Which he said, that's all right.
Yeah. And I like the fact that, by the way, Mike is not a particularly smart guy. He's just, they're all kind of basic people, which is good. Like, I think that works.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then in the closing titles, it says that in 1993, the loggers resubmitted to additional polygraphy, and they passed, corroborating their innocence. By the way, in the trivia here, this is where Craig Schaefer was newly fired from the movie. He would often show up to work late. Other actors and the producers were annoyed. But the reason he wasn't fired was that the director said his attitude adopted the character very well. So, and by the way, so another piece of trivia. So the alien abduction scene, by the way, this was a book first. Travis Walton wrote a book.
The
Walton Experience or something.
Yeah.
Walton Files. I kind of. The book actually.
The Walton Experience in 1978.
Yeah. So he wrote the book, and probably with a ghostwriter or whatever. But the alien abduction story he tells is nothing like this movie is. The screenwriter, the scriptwriter.
Yeah, that's what Wikipedia says too.
Yeah, said that. That the executives thought his account was boring. So we need to spice it up a little bit.
According to, what are they crediting? Paramount Pictures decided Walton's account was, quote, too fuzzy and too similar to other televised Close Encounters, end quote. So they ordered the screenwriter, Tracy Torme.
By the way, Tracy Torme, he was the writer of 28 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, 19 episodes of SNL, and the entire TV series Sliders.
Oh. They ordered Tracy Torme to write a, quote, flashier, more provocative, end quote, abduction story.
Success.
Walton has occasionally appeared at UFO conventions or on television. He sponsors his own UFO conference in Arizona called the Skyfire Summit.
Oh, nice.
In 1993, the opening day of the movie, Walton and Mike Rogers appeared on the CNN program Larry King Live, which also featured Philip J. Klass.
Who's Philip J. Klass?
I don't know.
That's not Polly Klass's dad, is it? Be sad.
A journalist and UFO researcher.
Ah, got it. Okay.
30 years after the book's release, Walton appeared on the Fox game show Moment of Truth and was asked if, in fact, he was abducted by UFOs, and he replied yes. The polygraph test determined he was lying. And then there's a final anecdote. On January 19th, 2021, which is still, we're still in 2021. So January 19th of this year, Travis Walton appeared on episode 1597 of the Joe Rogan Experience.
Nice. I believe the aliens gave him ivermectin.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. It's,
oh,
good. Or maybe some CBD oil.
I have never listened to Joe Rogan's show, so.
You know what? I haven't heard a single episode. Well, I've heard clips and stuff. It's just not really my style. I'm not, like, those bro podcasts aren't really my favorite. I mean, he's a comedian, so I don't really care. I don't think people should be getting their
somebody
medical advice from anyway.
Somebody who spews pseudoscience is somebody I'm not going to listen to.
Well, yeah.
I just, yeah.
He's not pretending to be a news person, though. Although, he's got opinions, for sure. Anyway, yeah, don't come to a podcast for advice. And any podcast for any advice. How about that? So, any more notes?
Okay, my notes. Let's see. Based on the book, they're sticking to their story. Enter James Garner. Woohoo! Nice misdirection with the railroad flashing crossing bar. I don't know if that is a proper name. Oh, a good quote. A man with nothing to hide is a man with nothing to fear. Bleh. let's see. It's clear that Dallas and Travis have some tensions. Then there's some chainsaw porn. Let's see. Red light in the forest. So, why would you get out of the truck?
Well, Travis is, again, he's enthusiastic. He's not smart.
Also, as they're driving through the forest, Mike tells them all in the vehicle to stay down. If it's an alien, would that really not be moot?
They don't know what it is. It could be the Russians, right?
I guess.
These are simpler times, simpler people. He only has so many things in his arrows in his quiver. It's like, stay down and don't tell Pa.
The newspapers make Travis out to be a little bit infamous. Why a party? That's what I wrote down. Why? Why a party? I would not want a party. Also, if you slathered me with syrup, I would freak out too. Action. Alien ship grossness. Finds a dead dude. That was disturbing. Yep, that's it.
It presumes more. I mean, it presumes more people, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the vessel, I think the implication is that the vessel appears very large.
Yeah. Also, we have no idea. It's never addressed, which is nice, what the aliens wanted. You know, the whole thing was just about the abduction. It wasn't about any kind of motivation on the aliens' part.
Well, yeah. Because you never find out exactly what Travis has experimented on him.
Exactly, yeah.
And they didn't take his eye away.
No. So, they went in through, I mean, if you're going to go through somebody's eye, that would be the way to go. And they put that that mechanical thing down. They didn't ever, like, unlike Barney Hill, they didn't go up through his butt. At least that we know of.
I mean,
there's okay. That. So, what's your verdict?
I don't know how to rate this movie because it scared the shit out of me. So, I mean, it was effective in scaring me. Was it a good movie? Not really. I mean,
would you watch it again?
No, never.
Okay.
I got tricked into watching it this time. If I'd really remembered it from the first time, I would have been like, nope, I would have noped out of this. But, oh man. So I don't know how to grade this. A+ for scaring the shit out of me again as an adult. So kudos to that. As far as the plot, in the story, it was like a C, maybe. That's generous, I think.
I think a C plus for me. And again, it's a Saturday matinee TV movie. It's not really something I would... it surprises me it didn't make more money. Because if they had harped on... Although, if you look at the trailers kind of come at it from the aliens' point of view. And it's like, that you shouldn't have...
If they had waited until season two of The X-Files, I think this would have done made a lot more money.
Maybe, yeah.
But, of course, nobody knew that at the time. But, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it was schlocky writing. I mean, the fact that they sensationalized it, but the plot still was kind of bleh. I think they could have done better for their $15 million.
Yeah, but I think they're trying to keep true to the story itself, except for the abduction part of it, which is, of course, all subjective anyway. But I think they wanted to lean a little bit in the fact that it was based on a true story. And that these guys passed that lie detector test.
I suppose.
Yeah. So, housekeeping?
Do I have a housekeeping?
I've got something. Kelly and I have been watching Dexter. We signed up for Showtime to watch Dexter. And because we were caught up with Dexter, we started watching Yellowjackets. Are you familiar with the Yellowjackets? Have you seen ads or anything?
Nope.
Okay, I'll give you the thumbnail. Yellowjackets is about a group of high school soccer players who were going to nationals on a plane, and the plane crashed in the woods. And it flashes forward like 25 years, and the survivors are like never talked about what happened, but it strongly implied there may have been cannibalism. Oh, and it kind of goes back and forth between in the timelines between when they were in the woods as teenagers and what they're doing now. But it's perfect in the it's got intrigue and stuff. But Melanie Lynskey is great. She plays one of them. There's also Juliette Lewis.
Is this episodic?
Okay. It is, yeah. Juliette Lewis, who looks more and more like her dad every day.
Who's her dad?
Jeffrey Lewis, the character actor who has been in everything.
I don't recognize the name. I'm sure I recognize the face, but...
Well, it turns out, just look at Juliette Lewis these days. It's the same face. And also Christina Ricci, who is really great too.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's and the actors who play the teenagers are great too, and it's great. It's like it hooked me. It's in that same category, I think, as Dexter, where, you know, it's a little bit soap opera-y.
Oh. He's been in everything. You're right.
Yeah. Jeffrey Lewis. Oh, Jeffrey Lewis is a star.
Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
He was in he did these audio things called Celestial Navigations, where they had like new age music behind his little storytelling pieces.
I'm familiar with Celestial Navigations.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's kind of a thing. It's a little bit cheesy, but yeah, I thought those were great.
A little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
He died in 2015.
He did. Yes.
Oh.
Let's see. And what else? I think that's all of my housekeeping. How are you enjoying Anchorage so far, or Alaska? Now, you've been in Sunrise a little bit, right?
We went up on Saturday after the bizarre fair.
How was that?
It was a bust.
Oh, no.
I mean, there were people.
Was it at the Denia Center? Or was it?
Yes, it was. Okay. Which I've never been to before.
Oh, there you go.
So that was a new experience. But we showed up, we were 15 minutes early, and there was nobody else there. And so Mom and Dad were kind of panicking a little. Not panicking.
That's thinking wrong, like they missed a day or something?
Well, that's what that's what Dad said. Are you sure we have the right day? Because I guess in days past or years past when they've gone to events like this, there are tons of people waiting. Oh, and when we showed up into the event, there were maybe six or seven people milling about.
Oh, no.
So
were there a lot of vendors?
Having not been to one before, yeah, it appeared full to me when we went in.
Yeah.
But nothing I wanted to buy. I mean, they had kitschy stuff, but it was like stuff you'd find at the
Like when you go to the state fair, I don't want to buy any of that stuff. Yeah. I don't even want to win it as a prize anymore as an adult.
There's that.
So I don't have to take it home and throw it away. It's just garbage. So it was fine. I think mom bought some scarf or something from somebody who makes apparel, which was fine. I mean, it was worthwhile for her. But
well, mom and dad have relationships with some of these vendors.
Yeah, but then nobody they knew or nobody that they had regularly frequented as a customer was there. And they, both mom and dad speculated. It was pretty late in the season. This is pretty late in the season for something to occur on top of COVID.
Yeah.
So it may be that just people aren't really involved and engaged right now, which is not an unfair hypothesis. So so then we left for the cabin. Went there. There's a lot of snow. So Jesse and I dug out a pathway. Runway so that dad could basically shotgun the snow machine up the driveway.
Nice.
Because he was concerned that there was too much snow that he would lose the snow machine and it would be unsafe. He might get the machine sunk and then no good for anybody. But I snowshoed up to the top of the driveway and made some tracks and packed down some of the snow and then walked back down and then it was funny because dad and Jesse were discussing that they were going to run around a couple tracks on the driveway to get the snow compacted enough and then we would take stuff up. But
how many snow machines do they have there?
Three, I think. Three or four.
And then the side-by-side?
Mm-hmm. I think they have three snow machines, I'm going to say. I could be wrong, though. But I know they have at least two because Jesse and dad were riding them. So I snowshoed up to the top. Mom followed me behind because my legs are a little longer. So I was breaking trail, basically. Mm-hmm. And then we got to the top of the cabin. She took the dog and they went in the cabin. And I went back down the driveway. Driveway's relative because the thing is, you know, 1,000,000,000 miles long and steep as hell.
Super steep,
yeah. So I walked back down and then dad was like, do you want to ride up or do you want to walk back up? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, well, you can ride up, but, you know. And so I got on the snow machine behind him and he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, look, I grew up with your driving scaring me. This is nothing. I'm not worried about this. Like, this is...
That's funny.
You know, like, whatever. He laughed a little
bit. You guys have an AED. We'll be fine.
I think he laughed a little bit. And then we got to the top of the driveway, and I thought... I said out loud, I'm like, this isn't even stratosphere level of... Like, this was fine. Nah, it's fine. So, it was pretty snowy. It was beautiful. I have some beautiful pictures of the sunrise one morning out of the window of the cabin. But
how's the new bathroom?
It's nice. It's small.
Yeah.
I think it'll be nice when it finally gets all finished. Mm-hmm. The bathroom itself is finished, but the rest of the area needs the rest of the finishing, like their windows aren't in and stuff like that. But production, manufacturing issues, whatever. It's nice. It'll be nice for them not to have to... It'll be nice for me not to worry about them going up and down those stairs, sakes. Because I have trouble on the stairs on my best times, and I'm fairly ambulant. Those
scary stairs.
Yeah.
The only bathroom they have in the cabin before this was upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a nice bathroom upstairs.
It's beautiful. I mean, the window of the shower is amazing.
Like, don't judge a bathroom on the quality of the stairs leading to it.
No, it's the bathroom may be the biggest room in that house, in the cabin. Because it's gigantic.
Yeah.
It's palatial. Mm-hmm. It may be bigger than my bedroom in this house. It's pretty big.
No. It's not quite that big. But yeah,
I don't know. It's pretty big when you take into account the whole footprint of it. It's pretty big. Anyway, we had dinner, we drank, and mom and I played cribbage, and you know we watched this movie, and then we were debating watching Dune, but Dune is a $25 purchase rental from Dish Network.
Yeah, don't do that.
We weren't sure if we started watching it, if we could continue it in the city on a different device.
Yeah.
So we opted not to watch Dune, and we watched, I'll say, 3/4 of the first episode of the Beatles documentary.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think?
I don't know how they didn't kill each other. Yeah. It was making me tense listening to them. And also, I wanted to stab George Harrison. I totally get that guy.
I know. Because
he's just so... He's a troublemaker.
And he's also whiny.
He is that guy who... He keeps saying the same thing in different ways, hoping somebody thinks it's original, but it just sounds like he's repeating other people's words.
He's also whining about how nobody takes him seriously, except that he also talks about how he's not a very good guitarist. He's like, if I was Clapton, I would be able to do this, but I'm not Clapton, so all I can do is this. What do you think?
Well, there's that.
Like, oh, I think you should play it like this because I'm telling you to.
I think he's underselling himself, but...
Oh, yeah.
Well,
when your like best friend is like one of the best guitarists ever.
Well, that was a great disservice, right?
Yeah.
I'm interested to finish it, but it's hard to sit through some of it. It's just really and the director producer guy dude who's still alive, by the way.
Yeah.
He's an awful human being.
Oh, yeah.
What an awful, terrible, he's reprehensible.
Yeah, they're all the worst.
I think we should put them all together on a cruise ship.
Oh, no, and it was so funny about how it's like, we need 2,000 Arabs. It's like, we're not going to Libya. Like, no, we went to India and 3/4 of us didn't like it.
Yeah, and Mom and I were kind of discussing after. You know, one of the things that I took away from it was it clear that... when Brian Epstein died, they admitted that he was the one that kind of was the gatekeeper for them all.
Yeah.
And kept them all the kind of in a row. And they decided after he passed away, they didn't want to replace him because they were just going to do it themselves. This makes it abundantly clear that they need a gatekeeper. They need somebody to be in control because they are not capable of doing this.
Yeah.
So,
So without giving any spoilers away, I guess, beep. I love the evolution of the Get Back lyrics.
It's fun.
I love when he goes like JoJo was a Puerto Rican in New York City. They said we don't like Puerto Ricans in New York City. So back where you must belong. It's so funny.
It's kind of.
He was a Pakistani.
It's very voyeuristic to watch because you're watching the sausage being made. And so it's a little uncomfortable because it feels very invasive.
Well, I love the fact that they're like, okay, sweet Loretta. She's got to have a last name. It's Loretta Marsh, Loretta Jones. It's like, why? Why does Loretta have to have a last name? Turns out you didn't need one. Also, JoJo Jackson. Like, it had to be JoJo Jackson. Like, really?
But they also, they're very openly talking about how they know they're being recorded.
Oh, yeah.
But they're just so casual. They don't even care. They're like, it's recorded. We don't care.
Well, after, in the beginning, they're like, why are we even talking? Like, this is so boring for you guys. Why are you even recording this? But I love the fact that they snuck a microphone into the meeting between Paul and John.
It's interesting to see them as such individuals while integrating into the band at the same time, because that juxtaposition, it's kind of whipsaw.
And then
they all like, time for lunch, and then they all just leave, right?
Yeah.
Like, what?
And then some of them don't come back.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I love the... I think it was the Stop Podcasting Yourself guys who were like, it turns out the fifth Beatle was cigarettes. How they all didn't die of lung cancer is crazy.
Well, and I noticed that because at one point, you know, they're putting cigarettes on the ends of their guitar strings that they're just hanging out. Yeah. Some of them are putting in the bridge of the guitar. Oh, boy.
It's also a very, like, blues guitarist sort of thing.
So...
But the fact that the director guy was always hanging out with a cigar, I'm like, oh, I hate you anyway. And then it's everybody just smoking nonstop.
Yeah.
And by the way, I want to
Mom was like, John Lennon is actually dancing.
Yeah, but also, Yoko Ono is sitting in his lap the entire time. Like they cannot be physically separated from each other. And I'm sure, like, have you got to the part where George quits the band?
No.
Okay. There's a part where Paul McCartney says, this is, he and Ringo are just like, or Richie, are just sitting there, like, kind of musing about how, like, I understand why John and Yoko want to be together. It's, they're in love. It's fine. Like, can you imagine 50 years from now, somebody sitting down and saying, yeah, the band broke up because some girl was sitting on an amp for too long? The one that knows everybody.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. But it turns out Ringo is like the most professional of them all. Because he's
just... Ringo's my favorite.
He's just there. He's playing. Yeah, he's doing his thing.
That's not true. Paul McCartney shows himself to be very competent.
Kind of bossy, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, but Ringo just... He showed up. He contributed. He did his thing. He was like, okay, I'll do it this way. Yeah. Okay, I'll do it this way. Okay. And he was totally game, and he was just doing his thing. But he was always on time. Ringo's like surprisingly the most responsible. Of course, I think he's the oldest, right?
He is, yeah. And he's the only one that can't sing. That's the other thing about Ringo. Ringo can't carry a tune.
But he is an amazing drummer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's great. So, he's great. Well, and it's so funny because he was contradicting on his acting anyway. So he kind of had, he was serving two masters at the same time because they were filming at that same studio. That
weird movie thing, right?
Yeah. He had he was in everything from Thomas the Tank Engine to Caveman.
Zunga Zunga, right? I'm interested to finish it. I don't know that I'll be able to get the parents to finish it or not.
It drags in places.
But I'm fine with it because just listening to them is fascinating. It is a fascinating historical piece.
It's just a little bit like the, like, you know, podcasters or whatever, where it's like, oh, I know these people's music, right? And now I get to see a little bit of their personalities. And I know the lore. I know who they're supposed to be. Plus, this was the end of the Beatles, right? This was,
right.
They had already been like this crazy.
This is the lead up to Savile Row, right? Their concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, which was I think Mom said was that's the last concert they did. Yeah. That's the Beatles. They're like,
they had already stopped performing together, right? Went into the studio just to record their individual parts and like leave the instructions to each other.
Yeah.
Again, that's where you're.
I imagine making music these days is. Yeah, I don't know. Not making music, I really don't.
Oh, also, you have a treat in store with Billy Preston.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's great.
All right.
And he comes in there and plays.
I mean, I will definitely finish it, even if I have to finish it by myself. But I
I'm through part two. I'll get through three. But yeah, no, part two is worth it just because of the relationship issues.
Oh, good.
And yeah, through it all,
it is such a soap opera.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, and you know, again, everybody's rich, so they can all kind of fuck off and do whatever they want. They're the Beatles, right? I don't think anybody has to do this concert to pay their rent.
Well, and so far in part one, you know, Paul's pretty much like, if we can't do this, we should just not do it.
Yeah.
Like, we need to, like, make a decision, do this or not, but if we're not going to do it, we shouldn't do it. And he's really gung-ho to do it, but also he's like, I'm not going to, like, we can't fuck around. Like,
yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Time's wasting. TikTok, yeah. Yeah. So, it's fascinating. Again, after the other documentary with Rick Rubin and Paul McCartney, it's really humanized him in a different way for me. Mm-hmm. And I've never disliked Paul McCartney. I'm not real keen on some of his solo stuff. I don't avoid him, but I don't own anything of his.
Have you seen the meme going around about, is it Wonderful Christmas Time?
Yes.
Where it sounds like people that are practicing a black magic ritual that are interrupted by people. Like, I love it.
Well, also that when Jingle Bells can be sung to the tune of, is it War Pigs?
Yes, yes.
Which is also amazing and beautiful in its own right. So.
to the seasons.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.